everyone, and welcome to our fall kickoff of the Intel Hub. For those of you new to our group, the Intel Hub is a collaboration between American Military University System, the University of Leicester in the UK, and the University of Rey Juan Carlos in Spain. As today's guest speaker, we'd like to welcome Eric Kleinsmith to our group. Eric is the Associate Vice President for Strategic Relations in Intelligence, National, Homeland, and Cybersecurity for American Military University. He has extensive experience in intelligence and security-related training and analysis, along with experience in counterintelligence, information operations, and asymmetric threats and tactical military operations. Spending over a decade as an armor and military intelligence officer in the U.S. Army, Eric has been at the front of the intelligence community in both the conduct of intelligence operations as well as in the future development of intelligence operations and analysis. Culminating his military career as the Chief of Intelligence for the U.S. Army's Land Information Warfare Activity, he pioneered the development of asymmetric threat analysis using the cutting-edge data mining technology of the Intelligence and Security Command's Information Dominance Center. In this capacity, he gained U.S. national notoriety for his involvement in the Able Danger Program as the military lead of a team of analysts profiling and mapping Al-Qaeda prior to 9/11. In the commercial environment as a defense contractor, Eric created a series of intelligence training courses and programs for the U.S. Army and other intel community members, growing his portfolio to over 150 instructors. Throughout his career, Eric has made several public presentations and interviews. He has testified before the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee and the U.S. House Armed Services Committee. He has also appeared on several news shows, including Fox News, CNN Radio, NPR, WTOP Federal News Radio, and Veterans Radio. He has been a speaker for over a dozen conferences and symposiums in the U.S. as well as in several international forums. He has been featured in a December 2005 article in the National Journal entitled Intelligence Designs and is one of the main subjects of the 2010 book The Watchers, The Rise of America's Surveillance State by Shane Harris. Most recently, he has been a member of a private investigative team in the ongoing case of identifying the true identity of the notorious criminal known as D.B. Cooper. As an executive with AMU, Eric is also the author of several intelligence and security-related articles for InPublicSafety.com and InHomelandSecurity.com, including Sisters of Battle, Analyzing Female Terrorists, and Terrorist Brothers, a Common Bond in Extremist Circles. Eric is also the author of a forthcoming book entitled Intelligence Operations, Data, Tools, People, and Processes, which will be published later this year. Eric, without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and turn the room over to you, and we can go ahead and get started.
Well, thanks. Sorry, I should have given you the shorter bio version, because that's a whole heck of a lot of stuff.
So. Now everyone knows.
I appreciate it. Well, good morning, but I guess the presentation that I'm going to be going over is on threat mapping and threat profiling. And a version of this I presented to the Countering Extremism Symposium in Shrivenham in 2017 or 2016 in the winter. And it was just on the threat profiling piece. But these are two of the topics that I'm covering in the book that I'm coming out with, and it probably won't be out until the spring of 2019, just with some of the publication delays. The one thing to keep in mind in looking at these two techniques from analysis standpoint is that I take a very broad-based view of what can consist or what is defined as a threat. And a lot of times it's a catch-all phrase, because it can include an adversary, a competitor, even somebody in a non-life-threatening scenario, such as a business competitor or even a rival football team or something like that. Any organization that is actively operating against your interests, whether it's in a friendly environment to a lethal environment, can be determined as a threat. And insofar as when you're doing analysis, you're seeing some of the same fundamental features of the threats, the same same components that comprise them, and that's when we get into threat profile, you'll see what I mean. But in looking at that, The first thing, next thing we're starting with is we're looking at the intelligence cycle. This is kind of how it's portrayed in U.S. military doctrine and or within U.S. government circles. But we're really focusing mostly on the analysis piece because it just seems like that's just where all the magic happens. And once analysis is completed, somebody creates a product and throws it over the wall and says, okay, we're done. And so there's not a lot of information on how to break that down into a more realistic way. So I've redrawn the analytical cycle, and you'll see it in the gold box, where the rest of the intelligence operations process takes place both concurrently and subsequent to it. I mean, collection operations is always going to be going on, regardless of what the environment is or what the requirement is. But it's once the customer generates requirements, the customer could be a decision maker, could be another intelligence analyst, it could be a commander, it could be a director, it could be an investigator for law enforcement. You know, customers are a very broad-based definition as well. But once they've generated requirements and it does get to the intelligence analyst, they're also going to be doing collection operations that are focused toward that same requirement. Once the analyst gets there, he's going to be going through several steps, from identifying the requirements, collecting information, conducting preliminary analysis, and collecting detail analysis. I'll get into what preliminary analysis and how that's different than detail. But you'll see here the two analytical topics that I'm going to be covering, threat mapping and threat profiling, are going to be taking place in different portions of the analytical process. So threat mapping takes place generally before, and threat mapping is more of a detailed process that requires threat mapping to support it before it starts. So the next thing we get into is, what is preliminary analysis? In other professions and other circles, it's really called something else. If you're going to an auto mechanic, the first thing he's going to do is just take a look at your engine and say, what do I got? What is your problem? Or preliminary investigation on a crime, what happened, who's involved, what are the people and the events and the places that have taken place, just what am I facing? And so that's really what preliminary analysis is. It's learning about the problem set before you're even getting a start. Any new analyst that has gone to a new desk or has gone to a new organization all of a sudden finds themselves in a steep learning curve trying to understand, oh my gosh, I'm working for a drug agency or counter drug agency. I have no idea what that means, what the drugs are involved, what the organizations are involved, the key people, the air, land, and sea routes for its transactions, the financial transactions that go with it. All these things have to be learned as quickly as possible. And that's really what preliminary analysis is. Is having the analyst spend time learning about their topic as opposed to assuming that they know it. So just some quick definitions. Threat mapping is portraying a threat group based upon their capabilities, dispositions, and actions within an operating environment. Whereas threat profiling is more of an analytical technique to help organize information coming in and then use that to provide support to other types of analysis, whether it's detailed or predictive analysis down the line. So think of threat mapping as just that, creating a map, where threat profiling is more of a way to organize your returns and then use those going forward in a structured manner. So when we get to threat mapping, the first thing we think about is an actual physical map. And for folks who are doing tactical military operations, threat mapping is relatively straightforward. You have your operation, you have your problem set, that you're working within, and the first thing that they're going to do is, well, I need to take a look at the map and see where we are. But for unconventional, asymmetric, or even problem sets within the commercial environment, you don't get a map like this. They don't operate on a physical battlefield or a battle space, however you want to call it. So instead, the analyst has to create their own map of what the environment is. And a map is really a combination of three different types. You have your physical map and your physical environment, but you also need to take a look at the information environment, how the information is flowing, what are the perceptions, and then tie that back into the social political environment. So your information environment can include communications networks, it could include internet networks, or even radio telephone communications networks. Who's talking to who? How is information flowing? Where is it being held up? Who generates it? Who edits it and pushes it out? Social media is in that area. Whereas the social political environment now takes into account all kinds of things and different factors that are going to affect the operation, but you really can't plot those on a regular geographic map. And so that's where we get a concept of the operational environment as really a three-tiered layer of what the analysts need to be concerned about when they're looking at trying to map out a threat. And so this is a problem that I ran into, and this is an actual slide that I've had to share after the USS Cole was bombed. I was the chief of intelligence of an organization called the Land Information Warfare Activity, which was the first data mining operation in DoD history that was successful. And after the bombing, members of the U.S. U.S. Central Command and the J2 of the command came to our organization and asked us to map out the Al-Qaeda threats worldwide and in terms of what they needed to be concerned about. And the first thing we showed them was a map that looked just like this. Was, you know, in order to understand the worldwide, the Islamic threat that you're facing within CENTCOM, and that's one of the pink bubbles obviously surrounding the Middle East, you can't just have interdiction and plan operations against that one Islamic fundamentalism going on in that one area. You have to take a look at Europe and the Balkans. You have to take a look at what's going on in North America, the Maghreb portion of Africa, and as well as the Pacific realm with Jamaah Islamiyah and Abu Sayyaf that were operating predominantly at the time in Indonesia. And the answer came back, it's like this was a larger problem set than they had thought. And they had to start from scratch on how they would be able to do this as a central command that only was responsible for one of those bubbles. And that's what we started with the threat map, is the map is much more than just a physical space. And so the way to look at it, and I'm using a counter-espionage scenario, is like if you know you have a hostile intelligence service operating in your country, or it's your responsibility to track that as a counterintelligence mission, you're going to find all different things about that adversary that you're going to want to learn about, on how they work with their propaganda, how do they do networking, what are their recruitment and training, and how do they do movement of personnel, how do they provide logistics for them. And it may be then, as your area of interest comes in as a requirement, says, you know what, I'm just going to assign you to the finances of this organization. But you still have to know the rest of it in order to make it have a more complete or holistic picture on what you're dealing with. And so to do that, creating a threat map is a way of getting your hands around, once again, what am I dealing with? Who am I working with? Who are the key leaders? Who are the what are their dispositions and where are they located? And so when you're identifying the key elements of the threats, you're really organizing them in the context of the environment. And it's often done using a link diagram to show relationships and nodes and between the different members, the events, and the portions of both the physical, the informational, and social political environments. You're tying them all together. And so to give you an idea, here's your elements that you're going to work with when you're building a map. On the left-hand side, you're going to have the entities. You're going to want to track the significant people, places, and things that are important for whatever map that you're trying to make. You may not be mapping out an entire organization. You may just be mapping out a small cell and who's working with them. Or in the case that the U.S. military had to do during the beginning of the second Gulf War, they were receiving individual names and folks that were being picked up and detained, but they had no idea who they were. So they started with a single person and then had to create a map for each person to understand, where does this guy fit? Who does he know? What parts of the environment is he linked into? Who are his associations and things like that? And so the entities are almost always going to be portrayed as nodes. Whereas the second portion, the second thing you're going to take a look at are the events and things that have occurred. And they can be significant enough to be a node, but they can also be a link in between those nodes. And so the arrest of somebody may be a significant event, or a specific attack, a bombing that occurred, or a transfer of funds that was a significantly part of to understand the logistics of the organization. And then the last part are the associations, and these are always going to be represented as a link. Whether it's a link between somebody because they're related as brothers, they're part of the same family, or they're married, or they're part of the same tight network that have been assigned, or even part of this, a previous unit or an organization in the past. That's how you're going to show these different areas. So by creating a map, you're going to use both nodes and links. It's just understanding here is, well, what constitutes a node? Why would that want to be significant or even talked about? So here's a basic threat map example, and I'm using a fictitious drug cartel that's emerging out of Mexico. Now, I've juxtapositioned this map over a physical map to show where the different gangs are currently operating in Mexico. But to understand the group itself, really everything is going to focus around their operations. So that becomes, as you start reading and learning about a group, you're picking articles, you're getting message traffic, and you're understanding the key people. You find that there is a center of gravity of this type of an organization, and that's their operations, their ability to conduct operations, and the requirements and capabilities that they have to have in order to effectively do what they want to do. And so training becomes a big portion of it. Recruitment becomes a portion of it. And then even the actions themselves become a big piece. Murder, kidnap, bribery, extortion, human trafficking, and then all the targets that are associated with that. What this does is it takes all these disparate pieces of a threat that you're really not sure where they fit, and it places them within context of each other. And so to understand this, as you start getting more information on this, you're starting to organize your files, organize the messages that come in, and organize the databases that you're working with to help you flesh this out and define this group. As things change over time, the map will change, but this becomes incredibly important to work both individually and as a group to understand what portion of the group that you're working with. So this is just one example. An actual example that was used was when our organization was working in support of U.S. operations during the Kosovo Civil War, and from our perspective, the Kosovo Air Campaign of 1999. In order to understand the threats that we were facing, this was actually a live website, that whereas each of these nodes contained message traffic and information behind it. So as you clicked on military or something, I'll just pick one out, the Montenegro MUP or the military or paramilitary forces, underneath that was vital information that we felt was important that was manually put into there. Just so this became really more of a tree that you could click on and move and peel away. So if I clicked on up at the top clan organization and I pulled that to the center, that entire part branch of information would then open up, allowing our analysts more easily get into that. So as our analysts were doing work, we had a whole team of folks working on this. This became the common map that they were working from to both store their information, put their products in, and then really facilitate discussions between themselves. So this is an actual screen capture of one of the ones that we use. And of course, you can do the same type of mapping, threat mapping for cyber threats. And the biggest discouragement that analysts have for cyber threats is like, well, we really can't pin them to a geographic location. But there is a ton of information out there on what you can do to help map out where they're coming from. And this is a way, this is just a real-time threat map that's using a secure engine to show different hacking attempts that are occurring around the world at a given time. This type of map then shows you can show you patterns on how attacks are occurring, where they're coming from, or if they're using jump points or you're remotely jumping from computer to computer, IP address to IP address, before they try their intrusion. Again, this is another software version to try to map out a threat. They just don't call it threat mapping. And so, just giving you a very quick overview of threat mapping, we'll now get into threat profiling. And threat profiling is, not to be confused with, you know, the word profiling sticks out and it jumps out. It's like, oh no, this guy's going to talk to me about a bunch of politically incorrect stuff. It's often confused with other types of profiling, but it is not that. It's often confused with behavioral profiling, where a criminal investigator or somebody like that is trying to peel apart the mind of a serial offender or a criminal that has patterns to their attacks and patterns to their crimes that they commit. It's threat profiling is designed to take a look at an entire group of individuals, not a single person. The other thing that it gets tied up with is when you mention profiling, it's like, oh no, he's going to talk about racial profiling. And the fault of racial profiling, besides just the, you know, any kind of moral ethical dilemma you have of stereotyping a person because of their race or origin, it's only using one particular facet of an individual, and then tagging all these other actions and probabilities on them just based upon one single piece. This is not only, again, is it wrong, it's a completely faulty way of doing analysis. What threat profiling has been used for is we started working it against cyber threats specifically within the U.S. Army and the portion of protecting Army networks. And we were getting intrusion attacks on different areas of military networks. One of the biggest ones was was health and medical-based information. Another one was simply kids trying to find where Area 51 is, and they're sure there was a database somewhere that had information about aliens. So we started looking at some of the more serious threats that looked like they were coming from organized groups, and started profiling the different groups to match them with some of the patterns of intrusions that were taking place on Army networks. And so we were looking at, these are old groups now, but Hong Kong Blonde, Cult of the Dead Cow, Chaos Hackers Crew, or Muslim Hackers Crew. There were several of them that were out there that we were then building profiles and then trying to match them against what we saw as a method of attack or the MO of how these attacks were occurring. And then that had grown from there, so that all these organizations you see down the bottom, they've been taught this. You may be surprised that Disney has intelligence analysts, but every single theme park, their cruise ships, and their Burbank studios all have threat analysts that are looking to protect, not only the business model, but just the physical security of the guests at the parks or anybody that's interested in working with Disney. So they've been taught threat profiling. Same thing with the company that called Yum Foods. They're the largest restaurant company in the world, I think. They have around 130,000 employees. They own Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, KFC, several other restaurants as part of their chain as the parent company. Well, in order to do business, they'd look at threats worldwide. Do I need to send executives in this area that may be non-permissive? Do we want to look at doing business in a country that may have a failing economic infrastructure that is falling apart? Threat profiling is incredibly important, not only from a force protection or a physical protection standpoint, but also from a competitive or business intelligence standpoint, where companies start profiling other companies on who's got the latest secret sauce, what's the latest car design, who's developing it, who are the people that are involved, what organizations have they subcontracted to or have they brought in everything from the design standards to the transmission. That becomes important to understand that as they're trying to size up the competition in the market space. So it has kind of a fairly long history. It's being taught more and more within the U.S. military as part of the Army's individual training program. Really, to look at threat profiling is what the Army used to do, and it's old system that they use called battlefield intelligence or battle intelligence or order of battle. And what, you know, in the old days when you had paper copies of everything, the intelligence officer would actually keep a file folder with different tabs that he would, if he had a written message that came in that had to do with the armor of a known enemy, they would put that into the armor folder. Or if they had something on a change in the weather or terrain, they would put that message in that folder. This is really building upon that because we now have better capabilities than just using paper copies. And so a threat profile is, I've deliberately designed this way. There's several different versions that are out there. Some of them are pages and pages of categories. Some of them are simple. This one is a very simple model and only uses 8 general components. And everything you need to know about a threat, you can put in and organize into these 8 areas. And there's a whole bunch of advantages I'll go over and why we would do that. Now, to get the information from this, threat mapping and trying to do your first study and analysis and display of your threat, you're going to get your targets, your method, your organization, your leadership, your method of operation, and your sustainment logistics, and even some of your strengths and capabilities. You're going to learn that through threat mapping as you start to pull in information to build that threat map and understand who are the key people and what are the key events associated with the organization. You're going to start picking out methods of operation. You're going to start understanding different, you know, what targets this group has been going after and then who are the key leaders. And so using this basic series of components, threat profiling can help you in a lot of different ways. The first one I just kind of already alluded to is that threat profiling is really just a way to organize your information collection. I've had one of my analysts come up to me and said, you know, we're using this threat profiling. We're not really using it for analysis. We're using it just to organize our file folders and organize our areas. And then we're using that to help further analysis down the road. I said, yes, exactly. That's exactly what it's one reason for what it's used for. It allows you to understand your threat. So if you're doing a query on a specific aspect, you know, you have a better idea to determine what types of queries you need to make into a specific database, or if you're requesting information from another intel organization. It helps you organize that, those returns, once they come in. And then it also helps you identify your gaps in knowledge. So if you have tons of information about targets and methods of operation, but you still haven't spent time understanding the motivations behind the individuals in the group or the goals and objectives of the entire group itself, those targets and methods of operation are not going to make a lot of sense. And so you see that, you know, I don't have anything on motivations, goals, and objectives. I'm going to need to go back and do some additional queries and searches on that. Second thing it does is it gives a common framework to work in a small group or even a larger group environment. You know, nobody works 24 hours a day, and nobody works their entire career by themselves. They're going to have to work with other people, hopefully not with these guys. But as you go home, somebody's going to be picking up parts of your mission and parts of your analysis. Somebody else is going to have to take a look at it. You're going to have to come back to work the next day and figure out, where was I yesterday? And by profiling and organizing your information, it helps you to much more easily get back into the business of analysis, get back into your own thought process, or to get into somebody else's thought process. It's like, what were they working on? I see that they spent a lot of time trying to identify some of the strengths and capabilities of their finance operation or their recruitment operation. And then the other thing it allows you to do is when you're working in a group environment as a supervisor, it allows you to assign different areas of responsibility to different analysts, depending on their capabilities or their strengths and weaknesses as analysts. Last thing that threat profiling does is, it helps you structure and prioritize the analytical workload. So once you start you've built your threat profile and you start accumulating information about your threat, requirements are going to come in that, oh God, where do I look for this information? Well, if you have your information organized using the threat profiling method, you'll get a request for information or an RFI that looks like something like this, like identify some of the expected changes to the drug cartel, you know, once we build a U.S. or beef up U.S. border security, i.e. or we build the wall or something like that. That's gonna change a drug cartel's method of operation completely. And so you're gonna look at their new goals and objectives. You're gonna look at how they're gonna sustain themselves. What types of logistics they're going to need. Are they gonna try a different way? Are they gonna try to tunnel? Do they even have a capability to do that? Or is this represent, or is there a new vulnerability that takes place because we see that they're strictly trying to use boats, and now they're trying to go use mules and people to carry it across through the wall. You know, what other ways are these gonna, are these guys going to change their operations? Well, you only need to look at certain portions of the threat profile in order to more quickly and efficiently come up with a product, or determine that I need to do a more detailed query on a specific aspect I didn't know about. And so it really allows your analysts to help structure their workload so they're not getting hit by a request like this and then having to start from scratch every single time, or relying upon one person who just knows that organization and is the subject matter expert. And so that's really what threat profiling does. Another method that was used by our DIA was one developed by Mike Gonzalez, who is an instructor at DIA. It's the Joint Military Intelligence Training Center here in the U.S. He's basically came up with this model that said that all you have to do is take a look at their an organization's past activities, look at their capabilities, pair that all up with what friendly forces and what friendly operations are being conducted, and that from that point you can predict future activity from a threat. This entire model, and this was developed independent, but once you take the threat profiling components and plug them in like I've done, you'll see that it's exactly using the threat profile components. It's pulling different pieces in different areas in order to do predictive modeling. And so I'll give you one more example. And this is one that's developed. No, it's not developed by Lockheed Martin. There's an error there. It's developed by a company called MITRE, M-I-T-R-E. And they came up with a way of understanding cyber threats. And they built this model called Structured Threat Information Expression, or STICS. This is what happens when you let engineers do your work, is they love to use acronyms as much as Intel folks do. So, but what they did is they came up and said, in order to understand cyber threats, we have to look at all of these different areas. What happened during the incident? What were some of the observables that our computer systems and network monitoring systems could see? Was there any tactics, techniques, or procedure, or TTP, that were part of that they showed as patterns? Once I took a look at this and I overlaid threat profiling on top of that, it looked like this, that these were really different areas, motivations, goals, objectives, the targets. The TTP is just their methods of operation. So the threat profiling components married up fairly well. And even further to the point, now we're also seeing that there are some places, different places, that we could look for that information. And so your threat actors, how they're organized, this takes place in the real world, as well as their own thought processes, their motivations, their goals, objectives. So you're looking at the physical environment for these specific components. Your TTP, your methods of operations, and your vulnerabilities, those are going to happen both in the physical and in the information environment. And on the right-hand side, obviously, all the capabilities, these are cyber capabilities, so they lay there. And so again, just by using threat profiling, we've just taken a very complex chart and simplified it and given our analysts a way to understand it and apply it in a better environment. So again, threat profiling is an organizational piece, but it's really a way of organizing your threat to provide support to any kind of threat analysis or any kind of structural analytical technique, and even mentioning some of them like analysis of competing hypotheses or devil's advocacy or brainstorming, things like that. You're going to be able to pull from threat profiling and mapping to support each of these different analytical methods. And finally, just one more caveat, just please don't confuse this with any kind of behavioral or racial profiling or other types of profiling that are out there. So that's really it. I said a lot of information in a very short time. Normally, if this was a training class that we do, we'd have all kinds of different exercises to reinforce different points or to just to help the grasp of the understanding of these two concepts. But with with anything else, let me turn it over to anybody who's got any questions or back to Nicole.
Eric, thanks for that excellent discussion today. One question that comes to mind initially is, what do you see as some of the key challenges when it comes to doing this from an analyst's perspective?
The biggest problem we ran into was if you're doing this alone and no one else in your organization is buying into it. And I had a cyber analyst, I'm sorry, a counterintelligence analyst, very seasoned guy came to me, and he was a friend from previous assignments, and he said, I'm really having a hard time explaining to my boss this particular counterintelligence threat. So it was a group that was involved with theft of technology, a foreign service. And so what I did was sat down with them individually and laid out these different methods, both from a mapping standpoint and a threat profiling standpoint. And he came back and built a spectacular product to go back to his, his bosses, his supervisors. But, the bosses just kind of take a look at it and just said, okay, I got it, no problem, great job. It wasn't until other analysts started taking a look at what he was doing, said, God, this, how long did it take you? He's like, this only took me a few hours. And they found that he was working more efficiently. So other analysts started repeating what he was doing, and he was relaying that back to me, but it never became part of either standard procedure or standard formats that were used. And so once he left, that method died with him. I hope that answers that.
No, yeah, that absolutely does answer questions. So if you guys have any questions in the chat, go ahead and please type them out, and we'll have Eric answer them. I know we definitely want to be cognizant of his time. Looks like Lisa is typing something right now. Eric, what have you seen when it comes to some of the collaborations that you've done when it comes to carrying out these different types of analytical methodologies? Obviously, what you've covered here is a nice, really a streamlined process. Would you say that some work better than others, and why do you think some of the older ways of doing things kind of stick around if they're not really allowing us to move ahead, if that makes sense?
Right. I think one of the biggest problems, that I go back to the Intel process, we still teach that cyclical process of the Intel cycle. And it's just because it's been ingrained for decades, and it's in doctrine. And that's, but when you look at the changes in capabilities, our ability to do data mining, our ability to go back and ask, very easily go back and ask questions, all of a sudden you're not doing the Intel process the way it was designed. When I put that one up there, I'm going to go back to it, it's really not by trying to tell people this is how you should be doing this one here. This is not a new way of doing the intelligence operations process. All I did was capture what was actually happening. And so there has to be ways so that if you've done preliminary analysis, it's much easier now to go backwards and go back and collect information. Or it's much easier to what somebody else has already answered your question. Why do I need to go through this whole process where I can just send you that? And so there's ways to get out of the cycle early. So that's the biggest thing, is changing doctrine is very hard. Adapting a new technique is not. And so, but when you do that, it becomes based upon the force or personality of the analyst and their experience. Again, once they leave, usually they take their techniques with them.
Perfect. Looks like we've got some questions in the chat. Lisa Koshvar is writing, who are these maps typically shared with? What other departments or agencies?
Well, it really depends on who you're working for. Your primary customer as an intelligence analyst, your primary customer is going to be the main person. But every time you come up with a product like this, you have to keep in mind, we always ask the same question, who else needs to know? And so as you're developing these products, you're going to be doing it with the eye of, this is needs to probably be shared with, you know, it's like law enforcement. This other police agency is going to need to see this. This Customs and Border is probably going to need to would use this as well. They haven't asked the questions, but they sure could use the information. You know, storage of information is cheap now, so it's not a hard thing to say, well, I can send you this information. You can have it just for references, because I know you guys are operating in the same area. But it's really depending, you know, you're going to make it for a specific reason, but then you're going to want to do it to share it with other folks who are, you know, are going to have the same interests.
Okay, and also along the lines of mapping software, I'm going to go to Carlos's question first before we go to George. What software programs are commonly used for creating such maps? I think that's a great question for any students in the room that might be interested in using this for a project.
The biggest one in the U.S. right now are two of them, though, especially within the U.S. Department of Defense. So first one is Analyst Notebook, which is an IBM tool. It was first done by, I think it was a company called i2. And the reason why analysts like that one so much is because it's a primarily manual way of building a link chart. And analysts like all there's been several versions of tools that say, well, we can take a look at unstructured and structured data, and our tool can build it automatically. But then the analyst has to go in there and tear it apart. It's like, why did it make this linkage? We had a tool that was presented to us that had, it was that at that time it was Clinton was tied directly to a terrorist organization, and it's not because, you know, anything in reality, is because in a speech and in the news story that tagged it said Clinton speaks out against terrorism, and because his name was with the, they used an algorithm so that if your name as an entity was identified within five words of another name, it drew a link between the two. So the algorithms behind them are, that's why analysts, they get really frustrated with some of these automatic ways of populating threat maps when the analyst just wants to build them themselves. So Analyst Notebook is a very big one. Another one that is huge is ArcGIS, which is built by Esri. And I'm not plugging either of these. I'm just telling you how widely they are used. And ArcGIS obviously is a geospatial information system that allows you to use a map and then overlay layers of information on top of it, like imagery or link and analysis nodes, or even other data sets like, you know, temperature, forestation, populated areas, things like that.
Perfect. I think that's going to be helpful for anybody looking into that. George is asking a question. Oh, go ahead, Eric.
I'll just say, like the thing you find is there are more people, there are new tools that come out all the time. Those are just the two that I mentioned, because those are the ones that have gotten official buy-in by most of the U.S. government.
George's question is equally important. So are you aware of any particular significant intelligence failures occurring due to different agencies or allied countries utilizing different formats for threat profiling or threat mapping, with specific consideration to any interoperability issues? That's a great question.
The best one I can tell you is we used to, when I worked for Lockheed Martin, we had these as part of our training program. We taught this methodology, and we were bringing in folks from all over the place. We did have a student who was working for Interpol out of Dijon, France, and he was mapping Somali gangs and pirates. And he took both the mapping and the threat profiling, and he created a overview presentation that he used at different conferences. And he brought it to a conference in Europe. I can't remember where it was. And he contacted us afterward. He said, "This was fantastic. I had a You know, everybody was much, it was much more easy to brief the organization. Everybody understood it quicker. And I was approached by members of the FBI afterwards and said, you know, this is a fantastic way of presenting the threat. Can you tell us where you got this? He's like, right down the street from you guys in Alexandria, Virginia. There's a group that's working for the Army that taught me this. And so it wasn't really a failure, but it was more of, organizations not knowing that, holy cow, this can really do us some work. Where'd you get this? Like, you guys could have known this forever, because we've had agents in our classes and things like that. So not really a failure. It's just, the lack of understanding that there is easy ways. I think that's, everybody thinks that when they move into asymmetric threats and they get into analyzing the threats, they see so much complex information coming in. They think there needs to be a complex answer on how to map them, understand them, and then present them to somebody else. And it's not. There are very simple ways of doing it, and you can build off of each of the components that I mentioned in the threat profile. You can build off of each of them and go into incredible amount of detail, but you can still come back to those 8 points. I'm trying to find it. If you can still put them within those 8 points, it allows you to simplify and go complex in a lot of different environments.
Perfect. I think that's very telling, in the sense that you have two people in the same country trying to do the same thing, but they're both doing it differently. So I think that's a good example. Not exactly a failure, but just a lack of shared knowledge, I think.
Right.
There.
Well, we like to operate in our own little territory. That's why.
We all like our silos. Does anybody right. else have any questions for Eric while we have him? I know we have a few more minutes. And if not, I want to thank you guys all for coming and put a plug out for our next meeting, which is going to be held on October 22nd at, again, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. So I welcome you guys all to come. This meeting is recorded, and we will make sure that this gets loaded onto our website so that you can go back and view it later or share it with any colleagues. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out, and we'll go from there. So thank you all for attending.
Cool, thank you.